If any of you don't know me or my wife, right now, Mylan's pretty getting there to give birth. We have one more month left, and it's been an amazing adventure with our first baby. So we're very excited, but everybody's been coming up to us and saying, like, you know, you guys need to prepare because your whole life is going to change. And obviously, yeah, okay, it's going to change. But they're like, especially prepare to never sleep again. And so I've been thinking about this, and they're like, and you know, people come up to you and they're like, yeah, you know, kids, oh, it's just be ready for it. And they don't really explain what it is or what it is about kids. They're just like, your life's going to be very different. And then they go on, they're like, you're not going to get any sleep, you're not going to be able to eat, you're not going to be able to do this, you're not going to be able to do that, da 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 da. But it's the best thing in the world. So taking all this into account, especially on the sleep level, I've been trying my best to get little extra sleeps in here and there. So, you know, every moment I get to nap, I'm napping, I'm trying to. Every moment I get to sleep in, I'm trying to just really extend it, because I know as we come to July, probably that's going to be very limited to 3 or 4 hour spans. I don't know how it works, so we'll just see what it's like. But so I'm trying to get all this extra sleep. The problem is my wife, it's like something psychologically, physiologically starts to happen, and it's like she's almost preparing herself not to sleep, because in the middle of the night, I'm sleeping and then I just hear this rustling around, rolling. Babe, what's going on? Well, I got restless leg syndrome. It's really annoying and I can't sleep. So then she goes downstairs and then comes back, wakes me up again. Babe, what's it now? Well, I got heartburn. It's just brutal. I tried to take some Tums and it's just, I can't handle the heartburn. So then she kind of goes and watches a movie and then comes back to bed finally. And finally, hi babe, what are you doing? And kind of fall back asleep. Well, then I feel some rustling around and, what's wrong, babe? My back's sore. I was working too hard today. Well, then finally, I just get to sleep again, and I hear tinkle, 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 tinkle. Are you okay? Yeah, I just had to pee again. Sorry. That's the fourth time I had to pee. And by the end of it, I'm watching my sleep calculator. I'm getting like 5.5 hours of sleep for the past 4 months. And I'm supposed to be like, when I'm operating at my best, I'm at like 7.5 hours of sleep. So it's like God's already starting to prepare us for this little baby coming into our life and waking us up every 2 hours or 3 hours or whatever. The point that I'm getting to is we, as a people of God and as followers of Jesus, need our rest. In fact, I thought about calling this sermon Nap Time. But then I was like, that gives way too much permission to Matthew and to Ivan to just close their eyes and just get very peaceful. And I mean, they do that already as teenagers in Sunday. I watch Matthew every Sunday and I always see him just closing his eyes and quietly meditating. Well, don't do it today, okay? But the biblical principle of rest, there's actually a string throughout the Bible that talks about balancing work with rest. And I just felt like this is a really great time to talk about rest, because we are entering the summer season. But generally, it's funny, because we enter summer and we're like, yeah, I'm going to rest. I'm going to take time to relax. But then we end up like cramming so much into our summer and doing so much that then we get to the fall where we're back busy at work and whatnot, and we're just as tired as we were before. And I kind of understand it, because we live in a cold, dark place for most of the year. And so when it's bright and beautiful, we want to do a lot. But I want to just propose that you take time in this season of summer to truly rest yourself, to truly enter God's promise of rest. And now, why did I choose this? We were actually going to start a new series on the Purple Book. And Jordan came up to me last Sunday and said, by the way, you're preaching this Sunday, and you're preaching on sin and salvation. I'm like, whew, that's really heavy. I got a week on that. Like, I got to carry that whole theology, which is very important. But then I was like, Leonard's going to come back from South Africa next week. And we know he's not going to follow the preaching plan. We know he's going to talk about South Africa. We know he's going to be impacted by something there. So I figured I'm just going to preach on rest, and this will just be a little layover until we start a new series in a couple of weeks. So if you're okay with that, then that's great. But also, the other thing that kind of brought me to want to talk about rest is Jordy's message 2 weeks ago. And he talked about his journey through battling sickness and just really coming out of a very dark time. And one of the things that he mentioned was taking moments to contemplate God. When you go through a period of extreme stress and anxiety and fear, we need to balance that with extended periods of rest and recovery and times to recuperate and recover. And the Bible has some very specific instructions about rest. It's not only something that we need to do physically, emotionally, psychologically, but we also need to rest spiritually as well. We need to learn to rest in God. We need to learn to find rest with God our helper, God our Father. It's like when a baby lifts their hands to their father, we need to realize that our Father in heaven is also holding us. He's also carrying us. And sometimes we struggle and we strive so hard that we don't realize that we actually have a Father in heaven that is carrying us through every life circumstance, every position in life. We have a Heavenly Father that is carrying us and holding us and giving us rest. It's funny, we actually watched this video about newborns. And so for the first 3 months, newborns can be colicky and cry a lot, and they don't understand why. But we watched this physician, and basically, he takes a baby, and it's screaming and going hysterical. And he just flips it on its side and then goes, shh. And it's amazing what would happen. This baby would just go like this, bloop. And completely stop crying. And it's because the physician was mirroring the womb for the baby. And as soon as it felt comfortable and soft and it felt like it was back in that womb position, that it could finally relax and recover. And that's the same with us. We need our Heavenly Father sometimes to pick us up and just go, and then we can reset. We stop crying over small things, and we can rest and sleep. And rest is a huge problem in our society, actually. Generally, in North American society, we like to play hard, but then we work hard. And we work hard, and we play hard. And generally, our society thinks that if we work, and we build an empire, and we build things, and we do things hard, then we will be rewarded with wealth, status, health, all these things that will ultimately produce happiness within us. But what researchers are finding is we're actually working ourselves to death. We're slowly burning ourselves so hard, and we're not allowing a space of rest in our lives. We're not positioning rest specifically as a part of our lives. And it's actually starting to detriment our society. It's interesting, Mike Wiking, he writes the book of Lika. I don't know if you've ever read that, but it's basically saying Scandinavia is much better than the rest of the world and we need to copy what they do. But they actually did a study, and basically this is how it goes. So when consumer prices are constant, so this is a scenario, consumer prices are constant, houses are constant price, goods and groceries are the same price. They asked the question to people, would you rather earn $50,000 versus on average, or would you rather earn $50,000 versus on average $25,000? Or would you rather earn $100,000 when everyone else on average makes $150,000? So let me say it again. Would you rather earn $50,000 when everyone else on average earns $25,000? Or would you rather earn $100,000 when on average everybody else makes $150,000? And they found that over 60% of the people wanted to actually earn the $50,000 when everyone else was earning $25,000, rather than earning more money, $100,000, when everybody else was earning more. And the reason is because people generally want to be making more than the rest, because it's a status thing. It's something that I could say, well, so I don't know if you heard about my paycheck last week, but it was over 150K. Oh, you're only making 75? Oh, sorry. But the point that I'm making is people work and strive so that they can say, I'm better than you. It's the keeping up with the Joneses, or to some others, keeping up with the Kardashians, unfortunately, if you've ever watched that. good for you. Thank you. Never watch it. Seriously. But we as a society, we are working and working and working and taking on debt and buying things and doing things excessively because we simply want to be on the top. We want to be above other people. And Mike Wyking says, we are spending money we don't have to buy stuff we don't need to impress people we don't even like. See, we try and build this empire for security or promotion for many motives. And don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with working hard. I was just talking to Rob, and he's building basically his kitchen from scratch, everything, cupboards, everything, and he's got a mill and he's doing stuff. And that's amazing. But we also need to balance it with periods of rest and times of rest. And also, this can even come into churches. I went to a pretty high profile church in Australia, and basically, as soon as you got there, everybody was like, hey, want to join this thing? Want to do this thing? Want to do this thing? Want to work on this thing? And you're like, oh, okay. And they're like, yeah, if you do this, I'm going to promote you to this next level. And if you do this, I'm going to promote you to this. So I was like, yeah, sure, I'm going to do this. I'll do that. And then like, look, everybody, I'm working really hard, working really hard, working really hard. And then like by the end of it, I'm just like, oh, save me, God. I hate my life. And I literally did. I got so burnt out that I was so bitter because I had worked so hard and I had not allowed times of rest, and I was doing it for promotion. I was doing it for people's praise. I was doing it to be noticed. But at the end of the day, I wasn't doing it for God. I was doing it so my status could be elevated. And that was in a church. We so often emphasize the work of the Lord. You know, God's work in our life, my work in God's kingdom. But we don't emphasize God's peace and rest in our hearts. And we need to do that today. Why is rest so important? The National Sleep Foundation says it's the most vital health indicator of well-being. And actually, if we don't get enough rest, if we don't get enough sleep, particularly, we actually build up a sleep debt. And sleep debt is basically when you don't sleep, those hours kind of go into a little bin and it slowly starts to degrade your health. And the only way to pay that debt is to actually sleep, is to actually spend time recovering, is to actually spend time resting. And the National Sleep Foundation says, just like with a credit card or a mortgage, sleep debt eventually has to be repaid. And the more you add to the debt, the bigger your balance gets. And this is an interesting stat that they brought up. Staying up for 24 hours straight and then getting behind the wheel is like driving with a blood alcohol content that deems you legally drunk in all 50 states. So literally, if you are not replenishing that sleep debt, I am really scared on the roads. Because it means there's a ton of people around that have a debt of 18 to 24 hours of sleep debt that are driving around practically drunk. It's a huge problem in our society. We need to balance these debts with rest. Let's turn to I'm going to start from the Old Testament, and let's turn to Genesis 1. And basically Genesis 1 is God is creating everything. He's going about and he's creating the heavens and the earth, and he's creating the stars and he's creating the sky and he's creating the sun, and he says it's good after every day. So every day God does something for 6 days. And then in Genesis 2:1, on the seventh day, it says, "So creation of heaven and the earth and everything in them was completed. On the seventh day, God had finished his work of creation, so he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy, because it was the day when he rested from all his work of creation." If God needs rest, then so do you. If God takes 6 days to work, then so do we. If we are God's creation, if we are a part of his image, if we carry his image and are image bearers of God, and he works 6 days, then we too need a day of rest. Exodus 28 says, let me just pull it open, and this is actually part of the Ten Commandments. "Remember to observe the Sabbath day, which is the seventh day, by keeping it holy. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest, dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any work. This includes you, your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, and any foreigners living among you. For in 6 days, the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and everything in them, but on the seventh day, God rested. That is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy." God commands that Israel must rest 1 day a week. He actually sees this as such a profound thing that we need to do that he commanded. God doesn't make a lot of commands, but this is one of them that he's saying, "Israel, you must take a day and rest and remember me." Now, Israel, in that time, it was an agrarian society, so they lived mostly off of agriculture. And basically, if you didn't work your butt off, seeding and sowing and planting, you were going to starve in the winter to come. Because you can't just walk to the grocery store and say, "Well, I didn't really work that hard, but I'm still going to pick up some milk and whatnot, a jug of milk and whatever from the food bank on the way home." They didn't have any food bank. They didn't have any social assistance. So if you didn't work your butt off, you were going to starve, literally. And yet God is still saying, yes, you need to work, but take one day where you come and you say, "God, I am going to fully rely on you. God, I am going to fully give myself to you. God, I am going to relieve my stress, my labor, and I am going to rely on your provision in my life." See, the Israelites were not lazy people, but they needed a day to rest. See, Sabbath, the Hebrew word is Shabbat. And Shabbat actually means literally to rest or to stop. But it also means to be completed. Even the root word of Shabbat is Shevet, and that means to dwell. See, when we take a day of Sabbath, when we take a day of rest, where we don't do anything, where we just choose to take time and to rest, it actually means it's a time where God comes to complete his work in us. It's a time where God comes to complete the sowing, to complete the harvest, to complete the work that we started. And it's a place where we say, "God, I have done my best, but the rest is up to you. God, I've worked my best. I've labored. But at the end of the day, I know you will provide for me. I know you will look after my needs." Shevet, to dwell. It's a place of dwelling with God. Sabbath was very different to what we do as Christians. I mean, we as Christians, we come to church and we do a lot of things, and then we go out for dinner with people on Sunday. And Sabbath, you literally were not allowed to work. Like, you had to have all your meals pre-prepared. You had to have everything. By the time sundown on Friday night, you would be taking a complete hold. Because God was saying it's so important that you rest yourself to be whole, to be completed, that you must not do any work. And Sabbath was one of two things. It was one, a reminder of God's creation, because it takes us back to the creation account. God rested. And so if God rested, we must rest. And it's also a reminder that He will complete what He started in us. Six days we work, but on the seventh we let God work in us. We let Him complete the loose ends in our lives. Abraham Heschel, a Hebrew scholar, he says, some religions build great cathedrals or temples, but Judaism constructs the Sabbath, an architecture of time. Creating holiness in time requires a different sensibility than building a cathedral in space. We must conquer space in order to sanctify time. Sanctifying the Sabbath is a part of our imitation of God, but it is also becomes a way to find God's presence in space. But in time, it is not in space, but in time that we find God's likeness. See, by Sabbath, God is saying, dedicate yourself to time with me. Dedicate yourself to a period of resting in my presence. I don't need you to build great towers. I don't need you to build great architecture. I just need your time. I just need a space where I can speak over you and love on you and complete the work that I have started in you. Psalm 127 aligns with this. 127:1. Unless the Lord builds a house, the work of the builders is wasted. Unless the Lord protects a city, guarding it with sentries will do no good. It is useless for you to work so hard from early morning until late at night, anxiously working for food to eat. For God gives rest to His loved ones. Emily Thompson also says, taking a Sabbath rest is an act of faith. It's a reminder that no matter what we do, God will be in control. We need to take that time and space and give it to God for resting. Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures, and He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul, He guides me along the right paths for His name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for You are with me. Your rod and Your staff, they comfort me. And You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely Your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I love this psalm because it takes us back to the rudimentaries. It takes us back just to being humanity, creation, and God. We are just walking alongside the brook. We are in God's creation, and there He is leading us to green pastures, and there He is leading us to peaceful places, to places of rest and peace and comfort. And even though we go through the valleys, we know that our God will provide for us. We know that our God will be our protector. And that is what the Sabbath is about. It's about taking time to reflect on all these things, to know that God's peace, that God's rest can come and envelop us. Even though our world may be thick with thieves and darkness and pain, we can still enter a space and time with God where He can comfort us and hold us and shush us. I love this psalm because it's so simple. It just brings us back to the basics. The Lord is my shepherd and I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the quiet waters and he refreshes my soul. See, it's when we empty ourselves of all our empires, all our buildings, that we find God, and he's there by the brook. He's there in the quiet, and he's there speaking to us, embracing us, drawing us to himself. David Roper says, God makes the first move. He takes the initiative by calling us and leading us to a place of rest. It is not because we are seeking God, but he is seeking us. See, we have a Father in heaven who is out there in the field and he is seeking you. If you are lost and you feel desperate and you feel lonely, you have a shepherd that is calling out to you saying, my beloved, I embrace you. I want you to enter my rest. If you are anxious and broken and you just cannot see the light of day, you have a shepherd who is calling you, enter my rest. Now we come to the New Testament and we see in the life of Jesus, I read one scholar and he said, Jesus encapsulated the life of Psalm 23. Jesus walked through the valleys. Jesus walked along green pastures. And Jesus prepares a table for us. Mark 6:29-32. When John's disciples heard what had happened, John the Baptist had passed away, which was Jesus' cousin. They came to get his body and buried in a tomb. And the apostles returned to Jesus from their ministry tour and told him all they had done and taught. And then Jesus said, let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest a while. And he said this because there were so many people coming and going that Jesus and his apostles hadn't even had time to eat. And so they left by boat for a quiet place where they could be alone. However, many people recognized them and saw them leaving and followed them and ran ahead along the shores to where they were going. See, Jesus knew that after an intense time of ministry where he was sending his disciples abroad and they were going and preaching the good news, that after that period, they needed to come together and regroup and take a period of time to rest. They needed a time where they could come and collect themselves before Jesus and where they could come and he could teach them and train them and speak over them and nourish them with peace. And if Jesus needed to take time to rest, then so do we. Luke 2:23. One Sabbath day, as Jesus was walking through some grain fields, his disciples began breaking off heads of grain to eat. But the Pharisees said to Jesus, look, why are they breaking the law by harvesting grain on the Sabbath? Haven't you ever read in the scripture what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He went into the house of God during the day when Abiathar was high priest and broke the law by eating the sacred loaves of bread that only the priests are allowed to eat. He also gave some to his companions. Then Jesus said to them, the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people, and not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even over the Sabbath. See, the problem was in this story at the time, the Pharisees had put so many rules and regulations about rest and Sabbath that it actually became physically, spiritually, and mentally impossible to keep all these rules. And it was stressing people out. It was stressing people out and it was holding them back from truly having a relationship with their Father in heaven. Because there were so many rules. And Jesus is saying, the Sabbath is not made for rules. The Sabbath is made for you. And so it doesn't matter if you take a day during the week or if you take a Sunday or if you take a Saturday to take a time to relax and to meditate and reflect and to be quiet. It doesn't matter. There's no rule about it. But it's saying, God, where do I need to rest in my life? Where do I need to relax? Where do I need to have peace? Where is there areas that are not at peace with you? Where are there areas where I'm struggling, where I'm battling, where I'm fighting that I haven't fully given it to you, God? And that's what the Sabbath is all about. It's the concept. It's not a material day or whatever. It's actually just saying, God, I'm going to be very conscious about choosing time to rest. Because I want to draw close to you. And I want to be a better person. And I want to be an active and proactive person in my life. Hebrews 4, 9-11 says, "So there is a special rest still waiting for the people of God. For all who have entered into God's rest have rested from their labors, just as God did after creating the world. So let us do our best to enter that rest." And David Roper once again says, "These are the times that wean us from our sensuality. That tendency to live by feelings rather than by faith. We become independent of places and moods and content with God alone." When we enter God's Sabbath, that's where we don't just allow feelings to dominate us, or feelings, or how I'm feeling in this situation, but we actually take a time to hear what God actually says about us. And He's saying, "I love you. I'm proud of you. You are good enough. You are full enough. Everything about you, I am pleased with." See, our Father in heaven, He looks at us with such pleasure. And sometimes we just get so busy and we get so bogged up in the world and we get so bogged up in doing things that we don't realize that we have a Father in heaven who takes us and loves us and beholds us and is committed to us. And we just hear and feel His love for us. Are you weary today? Are you tired today? God doesn't want a bunch of churchy actions from you. He doesn't want a bunch of religious acts like the Pharisees. He doesn't want a bunch of rules on you. He wants His Spirit to penetrate your soul. He wants His Spirit of love. He wants His Spirit of grace. He wants you to know that He is committed to you today. He wants to dwell with you. In Matthew 11:28, He says, Jesus says, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens. I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light." Jesus doesn't come to burden us with a bunch of religious rules and laws. He comes pursuing us. He comes to be a safe place for us. He comes to be a guide for our lives as we walk through this life. And whenever we feel overworked in our own ambitions, we know that we can come and give Him our yoke and trade it for His, which is peace and Sabbath rest. And even on the Sabbath, Hebrews would generally come and they would say, "Shabbat Shalom." And that means like peace on the Sabbath, or peace in your rest. And for a Hebrew, this means wholeness and completion. Richard Foster says, "Peace is the right balance between fulfillment and working for God, with God, and in God, and understanding that you can rest in His grace and His permanent fullness." See, when we are completely satisfied by God, then we can realize that God is completely satisfied with us. We are His creation and He is our creator. So how do we make this practical in our lives? I just came up with 5 suggestions. You can choose to use them if you want. They're things that we found in our life work. They're things that we're not necessarily always implementing. But how do we activate God's Sabbath rest in our lives? First of all, one thing that I would suggest is every evening, turn off your cell phone at some point. Or turn it on airplane mode or something. Because over the past, I don't know, when did I first get my cell phone? In 2007 or 6 or something? But ever since then, I've noticed my amount of sleep and rest has been diminished, because so often you get up to your bed and then you're kind of scrolling through the news, and then you scroll through this app and that app and this thing, and then by the time you know it, it's like 11 o'clock. But the problem is, because of this, we're building up a huge sleep debt, and we're not getting the appropriate rest and sleep that we actually need. I actually think that part of the reason why we're seeing a lot more young people having depression and anxiety is because they're not getting enough rest in their lives. Generally, a teenager is supposed to get between 8 and 10 hours a day of sleep. Now, I don't know any teenager that gets that much, but it's because part of the reason is there's so much access at their fingertips, and there's video games, and people are staying up all night, and it's messing up their whole circadian rhythm. And because of it, we're much more anxious, we're not getting the rest that we need, and we're not letting our bodies do the proper work and recovery that they need. Harvard Business Review talks about how the blue wavelength light from LEDs is much stronger than we think. And it actually makes us think it's daylight. So when we're texting at night or watching videos or whatever, we don't realize that it's making our brain think that it's day, and we're getting too much serotonin and too much things that lift us up, and then when we try and go to sleep, we realize we can't. We have racing thoughts, and then we can't sleep till it's like 2 a.m. And we're not getting the proper production of melatonin. And sleep deprivation leads to less efficient learning, higher emotionality, increased anxiety, and a less efficient brain. So, I don't know how you want to do it, but maybe with your family, set a rule that by this time, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, whatever, we're going to shut off our phones, and we're going to just take time to rest. And just take time to let our brains recover, and slowly just debrief from the day. And I promise you, the science is there, you will start to feel more rested at work, you will start feeling more peace, less anxiety. It's a step in the journey. Secondly, set a part of your weekend for rest. We all work very hard. We all work very busy jobs. Take a time in the weekend, because oftentimes, like for me, Saturday ends up being the day that I do all my chores, do all the work, and then we maybe throw in a little like activity in the evening. But literally take a period of 4 to 6 hours where you truly can do something that you find relaxing, that you enjoy, that helps you recover. Mylan's particularly helpful with me on this because I like to say yes to pretty much everything. So we'll come to church and people will be like, want to do this, want to do that, want to do this. And I'll be like, sure. And then she'll be like, you didn't tell me about that. And she'll be like, you don't have time for that. That's not in your schedule. That's going to be impossible to do absolutely all those things. I'm like, but babe! And then my problem is I like end up doing all those things and I do it, and if I don't listen to her, then I'm like, I hate my life. I hate those people that invited me to do that. I hate that they asked me. And she's like, you should have listened. You should have taken your rest. You should have had your nap time, mister. So make sure you take some time that you just allocate for your family, time that you allocate to rest together. I don't know if it's 4 hours, if it's a whole day, even Sunday. The reason I love this church is we don't have a service in the evening. And I know that sounds very unspiritual, because spiritual people go to 2 or 3 or 4 services on a church weekend or on a weekend. But for me, that recovery time after a church service is just as important as going to 5 more services. Because it's a time where I can spend with my wife. It's a time where I can spend with my family. It's a time where I can rest and recover and truly then go into the next week feeling healthy and well, both mentally, spiritually, relationally. Number 3, find a space where you can personally rest throughout the week. This is really important when you're going through a strenuous time or where you're going through a lot of stress or you're facing a really difficult time in work or whatever. Because there's a theory called a theory of cumulative stress. And it's basically stress actually builds up in our system. Stress is something that you build up over time, and it's almost like similar to a sleep debt. And it's something that the only way you can actually relieve that stress from your system is taking periods of similar amount of energy and time to rest and to recover and to recoup. And because our body is a whole being, so we're physical beings, we're emotional beings, we're psychological beings, we're all one. And so we need to incorporate all those things and realize that our physical body also affects our emotional body. And so if we're not giving ourselves physical rest, we're not getting emotional rest. And we're not getting psychological rest. And so if your physical body is not getting rest, then you're going to find that your emotions are not going to be good. So take periods, especially when you are going through strenuous times, and match it with periods of rest. So take an hour in the evening and go for a walk. Take a half an hour after you get home from work and just take that time in your room and read or sit quietly or lie down. And just take a period of time where you can just reflect and recoup. For me, mine is going to the library. Nerd. I like to go to the library by myself and I just spend like a half an hour there and then I come back and I've got a couple books and I love that. Or I go walking in the river valley and I just find as soon as I do that, I just feel like I could be the grumpiest guy and I'll go for a walk in the river valley and I'll come back and I'll be the sweetest person. I promise you. No, because it just refreshes my soul. So just find those things that you can do to activate rest in your life. A fourth thing is develop healthy relationships outside of church. Now that might sound scandalous. Obviously here, develop healthy relationships inside the church, but also develop relationships with people outside of the church. Because what you'll find, and I've been discovering this lately, is those relationships are really important because it's people that give you a different perspective in life. They give you a different understanding of the world. They give you a different understanding about who you are. So make sure you're creating relationships with people that see the world differently from you, with people that are different ethnicity, different cultures, different age. Because what you'll find is sometimes if you're wholly only amassing relationships within the church, you'll find that in periods of stress, sometimes you actually try and compensate and say, yeah, I'm all good. Like, I'm doing spiritually well, da da da. And we try and overcompensate and we're not always real with people in our church because we're just trying to show that we're still spiritually good and da da da. And sometimes we just have barriers. But sometimes with people outside of the church, you can actually share things that you wouldn't be afraid of judgment or you wouldn't be afraid of someone condemning you. And you can take this for what you want, but I think we have a couple of relationships with friends that are outside of this church and even some neighbors that we have. And they've just been so good just to get to know people and see different ideas. We met with our friends Lee and Lauren, and it's just every time we go, it's rest. It's not struggling. It's not fighting. And I'm not saying relationships in church are that either, but I'm just saying have people that are separate to this community as well. And I actually got this from a professor at my Bible college who said, just have people that are outside of your ordinary day in life that you can go and talk to and get just a different perspective of life and who can refresh you and who can just speak life over you. And number five, take a vacation or have a staycation. Find a simple place to escape or regroup. I love Doug and Lena because they love staycations. They go, well, they're not really staycations, but they go to Spruce Grove or is it Stony Plain? And they like go and just have a great time away in Stony Plain. So what I'm trying to say is you don't need to spend a lot of money to get away and be refreshed. Just, you don't have to go all the way to South Africa to get a new perspective. You can't go to places close by if you need to rest. I personally love going to Jasper, but we also love just going out to the lake or going camping or whatever. One thing that John Muir says is thousands of tired, nerve-shaken, over-civilized people are beginning to find out that going to the mountains is going home, that wildness is a necessity. And so get away, get to be in nature, get to be doing something. I know Russell and Helen, you guys don't camp, but you guys can go to other cities and feel metropolitan and feel rest there too. And parents, this is especially for you, especially if you have young kids. There are people in this church that would love to take your kid for a night or for two nights and just take care of them. Seriously, there are. There's people here that would be happy to do that. So if you need some time, there we go. We've already got, let's get some numbers and we'll put it up on the screen. But there's people that would love to take your kids and would love to spend time with them so that you can go and get the rest and the relaxation that you need to recover to carry on. And so don't be afraid to ask for help. Like, as a church, we are here to support one another and carry one another. And so we want to support parents. And also we know that parents need to get breaks. And so we want to support you, and don't be afraid to ask for help to get that time of rest and relaxation. The band can come up. I guess I just want to conclude and just say God is here for you to rest and to feel at peace today. And I just felt so strongly that His Holy Spirit was just wanting me to speak this message because somebody needs to know that there is a God of rest and there is a God of peace and there is a God who wants to be there for you, who wants to comfort you. But also we have to take decisive action. We actually have to schedule rest into our lives. We actually need to schedule slots of time where we take periods to reflect and to be quiet and to have peace into our busy schedule. And so I just want to encourage you today to take that very practically. And I'm just going to leave you with this, Philippians 4:6. Do not worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank Him for all that He has done. Then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you continue to live in Jesus Christ.